Blog Talk Radio.
This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Basically, the 1% of the motorcycle community who operates outside the law.
Their total focus is on danger for the enemy. They have the policy of shoot or kill on sight if they can.
It's bullshit. Law enforcement just tries to paint this picture to the media to just cover up their bullshit, cover up their lies, and I just like to say fuck them. That's straight from Mike P.
Jump on your bike, let's hit the road.
Come on.
Fuck the 5-0, man, we out of control.
Hey.
A bad motherfucker, riding through the night. A 50 motherfucker and a little
come on.
Justin Rose of Metalholic Magazine and The Examiner with us today, the legend himself, Kevin Steinfeld. How are you doing, man?
Great, man. Look at you.
Whatever works. The camera's probably freer than I am.
People, but, you know, you can do that thing when you talk right to the camera.
There you go. No, this is fine. So, Atticus 7, tell us the backstory and everything, because it's a great, great story.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, obviously, you know, I've been playing in Biohazard since I was a little kid. When I started the band when I was 17, and Rusty was my best friend. And when he got out of prison, he had a bunch of songs he'd written that were really passionate and heartfelt. He kind of had the spark I was looking for. I was looking to reinvent myself and do something a little bit more melodic, but still really heavy, kind of in that, you know, Black Sabbath, Metallica, you know, Godsmack. Kind of bands with us always had that thing, but kind of with our kind of with our ideology, philosophy, and lifestyle.
Right.
Kind of like All for One, One for All, Brotherhood, you know, badass album by the heavy metal band. It became a thing, man, real quick. Me and Rusty started jamming, and it just naturally started writing songs, and before we know it, you know, we got a record contract. Got the studio with Mud Rock, did a record, put it out, put together this incredible band with great musicians, and like a dream come true, man. Here we are on the upwards, like, who would have thought it, you know?
Right. And the response, I know you guys are going on early, but the response from the people that are here is phenomenal.
The response is great, in particularly because nobody knows our music yet. I mean, our album's been out another than 2 months, and we're it's a brand new band, so we don't expect people to know our music yet. I mean, just the people in the front row, you know, singing along with the lyrics, but just a couple. And that's a big testament to the, like, how the band is live, because we're winning people over just on the live show, you know. I hear the people going, God dang, I never heard of y'all, but man, I want to get that CD. And that's what it's about, you know, sharing our music and sharing our messages.
And the album is absolutely phenomenal. Matter of fact, I had to pick up my own physical copy today. The digital just isn't good enough anymore. I miss the days that we actually have the album in your hand. You can look at it and feel it. Yeah, I'm telling you. So, I was just talking to the other guys in the band about the first festival that they ever went to. And I'm thinking, man, I was at like Day on the Green and Us Festival. These guys are like 10, 20 years later. It's like, so, now, obviously, we know Rusty's doing the Sons of Anarchy thing on the side and everything, which is really cool. What else have you got going on the side aside from that?
Hey,
oh, and here he is. Rusty himself.
Oh, man.
Well, should I wait over here?
No, come on.
Okay,
the
big of the two shot. So,
there we go. Now we can get the whole story at once and everything.
I was talking about what else we're doing besides stuff in the band. I mean, you know, nowadays, you know, playing music, I mean, that's our first love. Both of us, it's kind of music. We brought us together, you know, we're using a friendship. You know, like Rusty's, you know, he's up with New Season and Sons of Anarchy. I used to be Oz or HBO. Nowadays, even if not enough to play music, you know, we want to be always creating, whether Rusty's building a motorcycle, or I'm managing my wife's music group, or, you know, we're always trying to do other things, just whatever ideas we have a passion about, you know, think of yourself as an actor, expressing yourself as a musician, a little different, but, you know, for us, the music is the pure form. What we created from scratch, you know.
Now, the music that's on the debut album and everything, I know you created a lot of the stuff when you were still in prison, but you guys got together, obviously, and sort of put it all together. How did that process work for you two?
It was really sweet. We have a real similar style, you know, of writing, and it was actually real easy. It wasn't even intended to happen the way it happened. It became a deal that was supposed to be a temporary kind of a, he was going to fill in because I fired the singer, and then he got the songs and stuff, he loved it. And then instantly we're getting together, we're like reworking things and massaging it, writing new stuff, and our style on the guitar and everything just flowed, you know, just came together real easy.
Nice.
I've been in Europe, you know what I mean, to do what we're doing.
I've been asking everybody so far that I've talked to, you know, because obviously you're loving all the bands that are on this tour, because it's a great tour, but I've been asking everybody, is there one band that's been kicking your ass every night, and everybody keeps saying POD, and I can see you sitting here.
I've been impressed with these guys since they started, you know, I knew them when they were brand new. I've totally done this well in the past.
We were using that one, but I don't think it's ours. Yeah.
Merry Christmas.
You know, I like Godsmack a lot. We actually, me and my wife watched The Shine down the other night. And I only know that when Skin covers in the musical, man, have some production. Those guys put on a real, real show. Musically, out of all these bands, I like POD and Godsmack about the best out of the bands here. Pretty good other bands, you know, Red Light King, Candlelight Red, really good bands. It's fun, man. It's just like a resurgence of hard rock and heavy metal seems to be a really good thing for us.
Now, for those who don't know about Attica 7 yet, and especially about your story, Rusty, can you give us, you know, maybe the Reader's Digest condensed version for those who don't know your story yet, because it's a wonderful story.
There's a lot to it, but just put it in a nutshell. In 1999, I went to federal prison for a conspiracy case on distribution of ephedrine, which this guy put this guy together with this guy. I didn't even get near it, but I got paid to do it, and that was the case. So Reed put me in jail, and that was that. You know, so I went away, and they really threw the book at me. They were trying to give me life because they were charging me for a lot of stuff I wasn't involved in because of who I was. And I sat in there under the gun for almost 2 years fighting the case. Well, they interviewed 200 witnesses, trying to find anybody that could put me near the drugs. And there wasn't any involvement there, so they couldn't. In the end, the prosecutor interviewed the biggest snitch that they had that was next to me, thinking that guy was going to seal the deal, and that guy said, you got the wrong guy. And I wouldn't cooperate and tell him I was the wrong guy. You know what I mean? I could have ended that thing right off when I got arrested, you know, but I wouldn't do it. I couldn't cooperate at all. So he didn't tell my attorney what happened, but he called my attorney up and he was in a panic. He said, you think Rusty take 8 years and call it a day? And me and my attorney had already talked about this. We said, if they ever offer me 7 or 8, yeah, we'll call it a day. Because that way I know I'm going to see daylight with honor. You know what I mean?
Right.
So he said, well, let me talk to my client. He came to talk to me. And he said, yeah, you know, as long as we do it right. You know, so we did. Everything was above board. There weren't any, you know, no cooperation of any sort. And my attorney told me, you know, if you try to get him in front of the grand jury after he signs this deal, he's going to say, fuck you. And he said, no. And the attorney said, yeah, I know he's going to say, fuck you. You know what I mean? So that was that. So I did the deal, and I'd already been down almost 2 years. So that left me with another 4.5 or something with good time.
Right.
You know? So while I was in there, the first few years, I read a lot of books. There was nothing else to do that I was interested in, so I just read a lot of books. And then I rediscovered playing the guitar totally by accident. I played since I was 9. I took lessons from the time I was 9 till the time I was 14 or 15. I could read and write music, classical, finger picking, everything. And then I dropped it when I was about 15, played every once in a while. But I still had the structure of music in my head. And after that period of about 2.5 years, I was in a federal prison up in Oregon, and I was walking by the music room every day when I go to the workout yard, and I hear these guys playing, and I can't even explain what happened. and I got inspired. Out of the blue, I mean, it was a real inspiration. It was like all of a sudden, like flipping a switch, I really wanted to play music. And I went in there, and I signed up the band program, started writing songs and playing with a band up there. And then they had a riot within a short amount of time, and they sent me to Texas. Then they put me back in the hole again for a long time. And when I got out of the hole there, I was playing a concert 3 days later, playing all my songs with a group of guys.
Wow.
In 3 days. But the reason is because that was like a blues-based rock that I was playing then. And blues is real universal, you know? And while I was there, I started doing drop tuning and dropping down into D. So I'd switch back and forth between E440 and D all the time. And I was playing cover songs and my own songs because I had more of the cover songs than I had my own. Then after a while, I wrote so many of my own that I didn't have time to play the covers, you know, and I just switched over and started playing all my own stuff. And it just got heavier and heavier. Now we're into C tuning.
And
this is where Attica lives now.
Yeah. And I wrote like 32 songs while I was in Texas. And when I got really into it, I just said, when I get out, I'm going to get the best musicians I can. I'm not going to be a bar band. I'm not going to be a cover band. And that's the way it's going to be. And I slowly went through finding people when I got out, better and better musicians, more and more. And then finally, me and Evan hooked up. And it was a perfect fit, perfect timing. I mean, it was like it came from above, you know what I mean? A power from above put us together. Couldn't be better, you know?
It was weird because I hadn't even told him, like, even though we were really such tight friends, we hung out all the time, I didn't tell him that I had decided I wanted to. He knew I wanted to do a big music, but I didn't tell him, like, I just quit the old band and didn't know what I was going to do. The only person who was my wife, you know. And I said, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do exactly. I'm just wanting to sing heavy but more melodic. And the phone rang because it's Rusty. And he's like, hey, man, I just fired that singer. Would you fill in for a song, for a show or two? And I was like, oh, send me over the music, man. I want to learn it. You know, and I got his lyrics and something written in prison and moved me, man. It moved me. It was the inspiration I was looking for. So I fucking planets aligned. And, you know, hey, we, you know, there's bigger bands than us. There's probably better bands than us. But there's only one out of seven. I'm authentic, genuine. You know, we live everything we sing about, you know.
Guys, I appreciate you taking the time before we leave. Tons of anarchy. You're an obvious fit for it. As a matter of fact, Attica 7's music seems like it'd be a soundtrack for the show.
We've had three songs on there already. Nice.
So how did you end up getting hooked up with that?
That's another one, man. Just pure luck or whatever. But Kurt Snyder, that created the show, became friends with me 4 or 5 years ago. When he first started the show, he came down to my shop a few times, and then he actually was following everything that I was doing with the music and all the other stuff, and he kind of was also doing his homework to make sure he was as authentic as possible, and who's more authentic than us, you know what I mean? So he really does have a lot of input from our people, which is great, you know? And it just evolved from building bikes with him and for him to this role. He just called me. I mean, it was a pure surprise. And it was like, he said, I need Rusty to come down to our casting office. I want him to read for a role. And it's unexpected. I mean, it was like a gift. And I went down there and I read for it, and I had some other people I was up against. And then I got it. And they put me right in, and the first episode is kicking ass, man. I'm telling you, it's great.
I'm only on season 3 right now, so
hurry up.
I gotta catch up and everything. Rusty, Evan, thanks so much for taking time to talk to Metalholic.
LA Live, Nokia Plaza in downtown Los Angeles, California, for the 5th edition of the Revolver Golden Gods Awards. It doesn't get any better than this. We're here at the Golden Gods, of course, with Attica 7 for everybody watching. A great night for our music. Something that you guys definitely know we need in the music.
Oh, for sure, man. We're happy to be here at the Golden Gods. We're just excited to see all the bands play. We're true fans of music, so you know, we're writing new Attica 7 material right now, getting ready for our tour start at the end of the summer. So So kind of seeing these guys, a little inspiration.
Well, these guys here, too, Tony Iommi and Metallica, I mean, that's they're the top of the heap. You know what I mean? We love those guys. And I mean, the style of guitar that Tony plays, like the pentatonic and everything, that's what I grew up with. You know what I mean? And it's like, it flows, man. It's got that blues bass metal, you know?
Absolutely. And you look around, so many familiar faces, so many cool people, and of course, you know, we got to talk about Jeff Hanneman. We lost him earlier today. He leaves behind such a huge legacy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he was the embodiment of the aggressive guitar player, you know, just all pain and passion and fury, you know. I did a lot of shows with Slayer over the years, and, you know, I mean, Slayer, that's the bar, you know. You're either as heavy as Slayer or you're not Slayer, so, you know, I hope... You know, I hope Slayer lives forever, and I'm sure they're going to do Jeff proud, you know.
Anything you want to add to that?
Rest in peace.
Absolutely. Hey, which performers are you looking forward to see tonight? Metallica, of course?
Me, I saw Metallica in 85 when I was a teenager, man, at a club, at a little club in Brooklyn, so.
L'Amour?
Yeah, so I'm excited to see them in a small environment and hear them good, you know, not be at a stadium.
Any other projects that you guys are working on? I know you're always busy with your million projects.
Yeah, well, I'm managing my wife's group. This is the beautiful Lupe Fuentes. She's the lead singer of a group called The Ex-Girlfriends, and they're a pop music group. And they get invited to all kinds of award shows and stuff. So for the heavy metal people, this is our one shot a year to get out. But check out TheExGirlfriends.com.
Cool. Thank you, Evan.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rusty.
Yeah, thank you.
Have you have a good show.
Dear friends, Mr. Evan Seinfeld.
And I've got a new guy over here. What's your name?
Rusty.
Rusty, you play guitar in Attica 7, right?
That's right.
How did you find this guy? Well, you can't miss him, actually.
We've been friends. We actually met through Jesse James a long time ago. Motorcycle World Custom Bike. Rusty built custom bikes. He's got a shop called Illusion Motorsports. They're out here in Orange County. And we met through the bike world, and it turns out that we all have the same love for metal. And
nothing wrong with that, right?
Nothing wrong with that. So, I wanted my next project, my new band, my rebirth, to be something that was really timeless and heavy and melodic. And Rusty's the riff master, so we're writing every day, and we're recording. We're doing a new album right now. The first album, that's the new album. I'm not used to saying my first album.
Yes. First of this band.
Yeah. So who came up with the name? Because, well, Attica, as we know from back east.
Attica's a real dark prison. You know that, right?
Right.
And that's where most of the songs were written in prison.
So there's a lot of real heavy emotion involved in it.
That's good too, right? You want to have that in the music.
I'm telling you, there's no place that you can get into it more than being in a vacuum like that.
We just shot a video for the demo of one of our songs, which is called Serial Killer. And that's...
Uplifting title.
Yeah, well, you got my email.
Yeah.
He'll email me over, we'll get it over to him.
That sounds like fun.
Well, you can always check us out at attica7.com, A-T-T-I-K-A, 7.
Backwards. Backwards. Evan, hey, always good to see you, bro. Pleasure to meet you.
Thank you.
All right, watching SuperScum.com. Here we are. Carlos Reale. We're Attica 7. We have Evan over here. Of course, we have Rusty. Thank you so much, guys, for joining us over here. I really appreciate giving us your time and letting us bug you with a few questions. You're touring the Mayhem Fest, Still in the Blood of My Enemies album, came out last year in July. You were called up, I guess, latest edition, if you will, but that's a good thing. How has it been since the album came out as far as fan reception of the band and the album?
Well, I think it's been, the fan response has been incredible. The album got some really great reviews. but the record label that put the album out had some problems, and they really never followed up with promoting the album. So we've kind of just taken it into our own hands and decided we were just going to get on the road and bring the album to the people, like, live. The crowd response, man, has just been incredible. Like, the truth of the matter is very few people actually know our music because we are the newest band on the tour, essentially. Not just the newest edition, but we're the newest band on the tour. We just put out our first album not even a year ago. And that album's barely out.
Well, there's a bunch of bands who actually have their first album coming up in a few weeks, so... You know, you guys are not down there as the newest, if you will.
Those bands have been playing.
That's true.
Playing longer than we have.
That's true.
We are the newest band. We did the math. We would never lie to you, Super Skill.
No, I know.
But man, the crowd response. This is why we do this, man. We crowds jumping and they're fist pumping and they're head banging and they're mosh pitting and they're circle pitting and they're doing everything that lets us know we're connecting with them, and that's why we're here.
Anything in the works as far as new material so far?
We actually do have some new stuff that we've written recently. We're playing a little bit of it on the tour now.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yes, and we've got other stuff that we actually have a partial recording, you know, done on, and we're working on some other ones that we haven't started recording yet. So we're in songwriting mode right now. You know how you got to feel it? Well, we're feeling it right now. So.
And how many brand new songs on the set list right now for the festival?
On the set list here, we got two brand new ones.
Two?
Yeah. We're only playing four songs live.
Yeah.
Because we got a 25-minute set, and our songs are like 5 minutes, you know. So we're playing like 4 or 5 minute songs, and we're playing, and, you know, take a chance to interact with the crowd a little bit. We try to, like, not be forcing it in there, try to fit the fifth song. Okay, here we go, hurry up, here we go. You know, it's not metal, it's a rush, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And it's cool you're giving the fans, you know, some good treats, some new treats to look forward to.
I'll tell you what, the playing the brand new stuff, man, people react to it, man. So that's how we can test the songs. I know they're good. If it makes the people move, it's good. It's good enough.
What's your rendition of the new material? Because we're stuck here. We've been stuck here in the stand all day long. We weren't able to check you guys out. But
I mean, the new material, there's two songs we're playing on this tour. One is called Darkness, which is just like this so heavy and it's a riff. It's a masterful riff, you know. It's just so heavy, and it's got super melodic chorus. You know, one part reminds me of, like, Old Slayer. One part reminds me of Dio. You know, we're metalheads.
All in one song, huh?
And the other song we're doing is called Dance of the Dead. And, man, you know, that incorporates everything we're into, man, from Sabbath to just melodic, you know. It's got some real heavy riffing. It sounds like stuff I wrote in the past, and it's got stuff that sounds new and fresh. Rusty does all these finger-picking things that inspires all my melodic vocals, and we just kind of play off each other, you know.
And related to the band, can you give us a little bit of the history of the band? You know, how did it happen? Did it come about? Did you guys meet and decided to do this?
I get tired of telling this one.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm sure.
The short version. We'll do the short version.
Yeah.
It started with Rusty in prison.
Yeah, you know what? I learned how to read and write music between 9 and 14 or 15.
Okay.
Took lessons. I learned classical finger picking, reading and writing music. Actually, not tab. I mean, really reading and writing. And song structure. But I got into dirt bikes. Then I got into Harley Davidsons when I was 19. And I set all that aside. And I still played, but I didn't play much. And in 1999, I went to prison for a while. I got an 8-year sentence with the feds. And I got re-inspired to start playing again while I was in there. And it was by accident. I had no plans to play music. And I wrote 32 songs while I was in there. And I redirected my objectives in life.
Yeah.
I decided when I get out, I wanted to build a band that was, you know, the top players I could get, and not be a cover band, not be a bar band. And, you know, I started out when I was in prison doing concerts for the inmates, playing covers. And then some of
blues,
my own,
blues band, right?
It was blues, yeah. and rock, and then it slowly
transferred.
I started doing drop and riot, and one of them went crazy, man.
I think the prison time metalized him.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he taught himself in a vacuum because he didn't have anybody there to say, hey, you tune it down, you play the heavy chords. He just had these songs, and the timing was just perfect because, like, I had, you know, been the
the guy who founded Biohazard out of high school, 20 years. I was kind of looking for something to re-inspire myself, you know? Like, I was very proud of everything I did with that group, but, like, I just, as an artist, I needed more. I needed to grow as a singer, and my phone rang, it was Rusty, old friend, you know, we had mutual friends, and, man, we got together on the music, and we just, he plays how I sing, and I sing how he plays, and we just started writing music, and, you know, it's just been a constant building process, like, building and rebuilding, and we've enjoyed the process, you know. In 2 years, I wouldn't say any of it was a headache. I think it was, you know, writing and demoing and rewriting and recording and putting out a record. I mean, with the exception of the problem with the record label, so even that I don't care about. You know,
those are the Rocket Science Records?
Yeah, they lost the distribution. And not really my problem, but it is our problem. So
yeah, it affects the band.
We're going to figure out how to get our music to the people, you know.
It's really cool when you have people in the crowd that listen to the story. Evan will tell a little short version of the story while we're on stage, and you'll see guys out there that it relates. They're guys that got out of prison that are trying to be musicians or whatever, and it inspires them to really, you know, go that extra mile, you know, to try to make their dreams come true.
It sounds funny, but people need role models of all kinds, you know what
I mean? Of course, from all walks of life.
You know, and not everybody had all the opportunities, you know what I mean? And some of us have been through really hard things in life, and maybe we appreciate things more than they do because nothing was handed to us. We've had to fight for every inch, you know, and sometimes we've been our own worst enemies, but I think we've both learned along the way a lot about gratitude, about life, about, you know, appreciating every moment of it. I mean, you know, to be walking the path of doing what you love to do, that's the success. It's not about how many people you play in front of.
You know, when you lose your freedom and you get yanked off the street, you don't plan for that. It just happens.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you go from being at the top of your game into a 6 by 12 foot cell, and you're locked in there for months on end without any human contact sometimes, and it makes you reevaluate your thinking, you know?
Absolutely.
And then on top of that, the pile on top of that, they were charging me with 2 life sentences. It was bullshit, but they were doing it. I wouldn't cooperate, so I just had to take it and fight and fight and fight on the case. Finally, I settled for 8 years, and it doesn't sound like something anybody would usually be relieved about, but when I took the clean 8 years without cooperation, that was a relief because I could see daylight at the end of the tunnel. I knew someday I'm going to be back on the street.
Yeah.
And at that time, I really appreciated everything that I had before, all that freedom and all that, the clothes, the food, the cars, my family and everything else. I appreciated it like never before because I'd had it all taken away.
Yeah, no shit.
And now I had a new opportunity to get it back. So every day is a gift.
And I like how you translate, you know, that message as well from the slogan from the band, that it's just kind of a fuck you to the world, like 100% pure passion. You know, you guys, and I quote, you know, say it's all about friendship, creativity, and a powerful positive release to our negative energy, which is a really good message, really good also to divulge to the fans, to the metal community. And why not? You know, it's like...
That's a brotherhood of metal.
Absolutely, yeah, indeed. How do
metal
you think,
music, metal bikes.
How do you think the band actually takes on this social, you know, goal of divulging this message, being a positive influence, if you will?
I think part of it is right on the stage, like telling people you pissed off, you feel the pressure of life. Is it hard for you? You know, do you feel like I feel? Do you wake up pissed off about things? You know, let's get together and let it out right now. Everybody together, sing with me, you know? It's momentary therapy, but people get memories from those things. And I think the other part of it is leading by example is you know, guys like Rusty or guys like me talking about the mistakes we've made in our lives and trying to lead by example, not say, oh, look, we're rock stars, we're doing drugs, and we're waving guns around at the club because we have some money for the first time because we're fucking stupid idiots. You know, no, we're both guys who've been through shit, been in trouble, on the other side of it now, both saying, hey, man, you don't have to make the same mistakes. You don't have to go to prison to appreciate life. You don't have to OD on drugs and almost die to realize that life is worth living. You know, you can learn from, you can be smart and learn from other people's mistakes. Let the music be your higher power. Let the music lift you up, you know.
And you come from a background, you know, with Biohazard doing those type of lyrics of social protest, you know, standing up for yourself, you know, defending yourself, you know. defending your own rights. And now mixed up with Rusty over here with the same type of lyrics. And this is a powerhouse, if you will, for a message to the metal community. So I'm glad that this happened, this union right here.
Very good. Me too, brother. Me too.
You know, by now, amicably left Biohazard in 2011. Here you are with Attica 7, you know, based in L.A. You did say that you're embarking, like we talked about before in the interview, on your own journey of musical and personal reinvention. So have you actually achieved this goal? You know, like, what has changed? What do you want? Still
you know,
something?
Well, I'm always hungry for more, but, no, what I said is, what I said 2 minutes ago is true. To be walking the path, that is the reinvention, to be playing music with my best friend, my best bro, songs that I feel like help me grow as a singer, help me, you know, more melodic, more dramatic, more theatrical almost, you know, I always had dreams of doing something a little bit bigger, and I love all the music I made in Biohazard, you know what I mean, that's my music,
of course,
wear it on my body, but sometimes for an artist, you can be a part of a project and you can take it as far as it can go. Because it's not just about you, you know. So if you're a football player on a team, it doesn't matter how great you are. If the rest of the team is in a certain mindset, that they want to do things a certain way, not good, bad, right, or wrong. It's just, you know, me, I wanted to keep evolving. I didn't want to keep making the same album. You know, I made Urban Discipline in 1990. I didn't need to make it again. And I think a lot of the fans of Biohazard wanted that, the same thing again and again. And I could shit that stuff out all day long, but it wasn't getting me high anymore. So I felt like, out of respect for my fans, I needed to do something that was going to bring me the passion to be lifting myself up. You know what I mean? That's all.
Oh, no, it makes perfect sense. What's in the future for Attica 7? We'll just keep going the way we're going. It's all positive. It's all up. You know, we're enjoying the ride. What's in the future for Rusty?
Same thing, Attica, the motorcycles, the TV.
You got the Sons of Anarchy, of course. Yeah. You were talking about before. We heard you. Season 6, I believe.
Yes, I'm working on season 6 right now.
Filming. You're going to have to leave the tour to come back.
Yeah, I got to fly back and forth a few times while we're on the tour, unfortunately. But John and the guys are good with it. They understand, you know.
And what's in the future for Evan?
Man, you know, I got a bunch of projects I'm working on. You know, of course, Attica 7 is, you know, first and foremost here. In my metal world, my wife and I are producing a TV show online called Badass Television. It's a counterculture show, real fast cutting, 1 to 2 minute episodes about heavy metal, tattoo culture, cars, motorcycles, hot chicks, just basically like white trash TV. And then on top of all that, my wife is also a pop singer. She's got a music group called The Ex-Girlfriends. You can check them out at TheExGirlfriends.com, and I'm helping her manager produce that group. So between Rusty on Sons, me with Badass, you know, his motorcycle shop, the music group, Attica 7, we're barely sleeping, man. Let's go get some coffee. Lockdown. This is a song for those of you who don't know the story of Attica 7. Our guitar player Rusty here was serving a federal prison sentence. And in the confines of solitary confinement, facing the possibility of never being released into freedom, Rusty wrote the song that became the first Attica 7 album. This song is called Lockdown.
You to take people back to where Attica 7 started. you know, realizing for the first time that you may never see daylight again.
Yeah.
And what your emotions were like when you were putting these songs down on paper, and how you got that inspiration.
Yeah, visualize yourself in a cell, 6x8, 8x12, whatever it is. You've just been ripped out of society with the possibility of never having a chance to ever see your family again outside of a cell somewhere or a visiting area in a prison while you're either shackled behind glass or under guard. And you're not expecting any of this to happen. It just happens. And all of a sudden, everything you've held dear, everything that you love is out of your reach. You know, it changes the way you think about things. It changes the way you think about what you do. Instead of just going out randomly and doing what you feel like doing, it makes you think before you do those things with those large consequences. And when you're in a motorcycle club, you're going to pay twice the consequence, maybe three times, maybe four times, of what the average person is going to pay for any action that you may take, or even a reaction to being attacked yourself. You become not the victim, but the perpetrator, defending yourself because you're in a motorcycle club. So you have to think about all these things every day. It's like walking on the edge of a razor blade. And when you're doing your time, it's like walking on the edge of a razor blade the whole time you're in, because you don't want to lose your good time, but you can't be weak. So you have to do whatever you got to do to survive honorably while you're on the inside. Then when I got sentenced after being in over 21 months in MDCLA, they shipped me around a little bit, put me in the hole in a few other places waiting for my paperwork to come through, and then I got sent up to Oregon to a prison up there, and while I was up there, I was working out in the yard at least 5 days a week, and I rediscovered music totally by accident. I wasn't even into music. I knew how to play guitar. I played since I was 9. Took lessons from the time I was 9 till the time I was 15. Learned how to read, write music, finger picking, classical, the whole deal. But then I got out of it, got into motorcycles, and just picked up the guitar every once in a while, sometimes not for years. But it was in my head. The structure of music, the feeling, it was all there. So I don't know what happened, but after being up there for a few years, I was walking past this room where they did a lot of band rehearsals and the band program for inmates, and I just got inspired to start playing. And I joined a blues band, actually a blues rock band, and I said, you know, I'll come in, I'll play bass, guitar, I don't care. So they said, all right, come in and play bass. So I came in, the bass player hadn't gone home yet that I was replacing, so I played guitar, and they said, no, we want to keep you on the guitar. So I said, all right, you mind if I write some songs? They said, yes. So I wrote one song the next week, another song the next week, and I was writing new music every week. Then they had a riot up there, and they sent me to Texas. And when I got to Texas, I took a whole portfolio of my music with me, and 3 days after I got out of the hole up there, I was playing a concert in front of all the inmates. It was like 1,800 people in that yard. We were playing all my music. But that's because that was a blues, like a heavy blues. That's what I started writing, was blues originally. Kind of a blues rock, really really heavily distorted. And then I gravitated towards downtuned music while I was there. I did a lot of covers and my own music for quite a while, played at all the holidays. Then I think I wrote 32 songs over there. I've got all of them still. Everything in the same paper I wrote it on. And I got so into it that I just decided when I get out, that's going to be my goal. I'm going to build a big band around good musicians, solid musicians, not a bar band, not a cover band, and it's just evolving into what I wanted it to be.
What would you say is your favorite Attica 7 song?
That's hard to say, but Devil's Daughter, Serial Killer, All or Nothing, Lockdown. I can keep going, man. I ended up being the whole damn album.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you with that. I mean, there's not a bad song on the CD. But can you take us back to where you were physically and mentally when you wrote one of these songs and what was going through your mind there?
When I wrote Lockdown, I was in a cell. And if you listen to the lyrics in Lockdown, it's an inmate, and it's definitely a serious prison song. Another one, No Redemption, wearing a number on your chest, having eyes in the back of your head, because that was the thing. You always had a number on, and you had to have eyes in the back of your head all the time.
Do you feel that had you not went to prison, that you would be where you're at today musically?
If I didn't go to prison, Attica 7 wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be playing music. It completely changed my life when I went in there. I redirected my thinking, and I'm glad. I love the music. I love what I'm doing. I love what I'm doing with my business, building these fights. I love the music even more. And the TV, the different things that I'm into now, I mean, I'm enjoying it every day. That's one thing I can say is... out of that experience, when I finally did get out, I appreciate every day. Even a bad day is a great day.
One of the things that I noticed that when I went out to cover the Outdoor Tour is after I saw your band, there was an it factor, a magic, a something that that people can relate to and forget about problems and stuff like that, you know, with your music, and I fully believe that people are going to jump into your genre from others and come together with your music. What do you feel is the reason for that?
I think one of the reasons that that our music is so universal, it's not just one little niche like metal or just rock or something else. It draws people from all different genres, because there is a little blues influence in there. There's the rock influence. There's the metal influence. And every riff that's in there was written with feeling. I mean, when I write riffs for music, I don't just write riffs to write riffs. I write riffs that I feel, hooks that I feel. And it's got to really, like, make the hair stand up on the back of your neck kind of a thing. You know, it's like I know when I got those sweet spots in the groove, and that's what I incorporate into my choruses, into my verses, the breakdowns. I try to get the whole thing woven together so it's a feeling that you have. It's not just music. It's you feel the music, and that's important. You've got to feel those hooks. That's what the hooks are, you know? And the same with the lyrics. When I write lyrics, 90% of the time, I write the lyrics after I've done all the riffs. And the choruses, everything, they fall together. But I start out with the first line. First line is always the hardest line when I write, because it sets the pace for everything to follow. And then it just starts flowing like water. And it's very, it's a little bit of poetry. But it always tells a story almost every time. I don't want to just write ridiculous sentences, you know, just to fill the void with vocals. You know, I want it to tell a story. If you wrote it as poetry or just as a story. It has a beginning and an end, usually.
My photography and my video is, I try to look at things as a voyeur in letting people see the world through my camera. I see that same thing in your music. I mean, people are able to come into where you were and experience that, or, you know, relate things to their lives. What's your trick to letting people see that?
Well, like in the song Serial Killer, I'm not a killer. I've never killed anybody. But just as when you're an actor, you know, you act, you kill people in the movie, that doesn't make you a killer. But you have to be into that part. You have to become that person. And when I wrote that song, I really had to get deep into the character of this serial killer that was telling the story in his lyrics. And if you listen to the lyrics in that song, that's what it is. This is a guy that he's a killer. He doesn't necessarily want to be a killer. He can't help it. The demons take over, and he does what he does. It's not like he's looking for this to happen. It happens, and he tells it as the story comes out when you're listening to the song. It's it's very evident that he's almost a victim of himself.
Wow. See, and I think that's the magic that all your songs have is you let people see it from the real thing. I mean, the real deal. The you know, what's in the mind of a serial killer. I mean, who knows that? And
yeah, I tell you, I've been in some places, I've been around some people that were that kind of people, and it emanates out of them. Some of them, it just emanates so bad. I mean, you can feel it before they even say anything. And then there's others that they're like multiple personality type of people. They would be the nicest people in the world, but the other side of them is the homicidal side that flips, and it's like they're the most dangerous ones because they're a chameleon. And you can never trust people like that. But I've been in situations with a lot of people that are that type of people, both those kind of killers. And to try to put your mind in that place is, it takes a minute to get there. And if you want to write something that's believable with that feeling, you have to get your mind there. You have to be that person to do it.
That's a scary thing to attempt to get into a place like that and get out.
Yeah, I tell you, I remember specifically when I did that, and I remember the feeling I had, and it wasn't a good feeling, let me tell you. I wouldn't be proud to think like that on a daily basis, let me tell you.
Well, there's not too many writers that are going to be able to come up with the music that you have, and again, I think that's probably the biggest part of listening to your CD that's out right now, that it's just every song on there. I mean, I instantly bought the CD, and there's not a song on there I don't like.
We've got a really, really good team of players right now. Without even having a bunch of rehearsals under our belt, we can go out and play shows, and we did. And a lot of the time you take players, you're going to have to play at least 7, 8, 9 rehearsals together before they're actually tight enough to go out in public. We didn't even need to do that in this case.
Yeah, I saw you guys on your second show, and I was hooked right then and there. Like I said, I think I even really got in trouble because I didn't photograph any other bands but you guys. But it pretty much paid off, and I think the other thing I liked about Attica 7 is that it was so cool to see you guys after you perform. You're at the merch booth, and you're there till the time you guys leave. I mean, you were there with a solid line of fans taking pictures and signing autographs. And I mean, you to me, that's a true rock star. I mean, you were passionate. It's like you guys, if you could afford it, would go out there and play for free, you know, just to play that music. I mean, that's kind of what I got from that.
Yeah, if it was just about the money, we would have quit doing this a long time ago. I would have quit way before I hooked up with the lineup that we have now. Money has nothing to do with it. And the fans, they're the most important, and we really appreciate it. When we see these fans that come from 100 miles away or more to see the show, you know, stay at motels, and I mean, that's really true fans. And we're going to do everything we can to make that experience as good as we can for them. And when the show's over with, we're going to spend time with them. We're going to sign autographs, give them merch, you know, sell them merch, give them merch, everything. You know, we're going to make the experience as best we can for them.
It was funny watching you guys, you know, have fun with this, where you were throwing out the shot glasses and people were catching them as they're going by. And,
yeah.
And, you know, the parts that a lot of the fans don't get an opportunity to see, like, well, you know, the rock star life where you're living in truck stops and things like that. But and you even had on your tour manager, Al. Wasn't there a couple of episodes with him where some funny things happened there with the truck stops?
There's episodes with Al all the time. I have fun with him daily. He's great entertainment. Yeah, I left him at least one truck stop. I actually sent him out to check the rear tire one time, and while he was out there, I locked the door, drove off, and left him at the truck stop. Hey, Al, come up here, will you?
What's up, Rusty?
I think that rear tire's low, man. Would you check that back, the tag axle?
Yeah, no problem.
All right, man, thanks.
Hey, shut that door when you get out, will you?
We're gonna leave his ass again, man. I gotta lock this door.
Another time at another truck stop, he was outside doing whatever, fueling or something, and I took off, and he actually ran, jumped up on the mirror in the bumper and held onto the thing, so I couldn't get rid of him that time. I had to stop and let him in. And I think at another venue, we were backing out, and I had him help back the bus out. He was guiding me as soon as I got out and took off. And I heard these, I had the door open still while I was driving. It sounded like Fred Flintstone trying to catch the bus with those heavy feet. I said, this guy can run, man. I had no clue he could run like that. I finally let him in that time, too. He deserved it. You know, he had to run quite a ways, you know. So,
you know, musically or through life in itself, if you could go back in time and change something, what would you change?
You know, it's funny because you say that, like, you know, I've thought about this many times. I would love to change the mistakes I made that sent me to prison. But then I think if I changed what sent me to prison last time, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. I'd be going in a whole other direction. So it took a very bad experience.
Hey, what's up? How are you feeling?
Hold my hands. I'm all right right now. I don't guarantee how long I'm going to last, but I'm good right now.
Okay, let me finish this.
Okay.
It happened to me in 1999, and I turned it into a good thing. I took everything I had to work with, flipped it. And because of that, I'm so happy with everything I'm doing, I don't want to change that. And I would have to take that back, because there's really not much that I regret since I've been released. It's all been a pretty good trip.
Your bike building, I mean, this shop is, I mean, you're sitting in front of an $80,000
yeah.
bike right there, and your bikes are amazing. What, where is that going to go with Attica 7, you know, taking off?
You know, I look at what I have going on here like a triangle. It's like the devil's triangle. I've got Illusion, I've got the music, I've got the TV, and it's all interlinked, and they all work for each other. So what one does pulls the other up, and they're all connected all the time, and I love it. It's a great cross-promotional type of a thing, personal branding, bands brand, bikes brand, everything's doing well. So the better the music does, I think the better the bike business will do.
And the TV, Sons of Anarchy, that's a huge, huge show. I mean, how did that happen?
You know, it's just that was luck. You know, Kurt Sutter's a great guy. I really like him. He started that show 5 years ago, and he's a smart guy. He went out and did his homework. He came by here. He's visited many Hell's Angels. He wanted to go to the top of the food chain and learn about clubs, and he did. And it's a drama. You know, it's not real, but it can't be real. If you're going to be entertaining, you have to be dramatic. You have to have a lot of that stuff going on. That's what people need to not lose focus of. You know, it's a fantasy, but it's great. You know, but he did a lot of work in reality so that he could have the most realistic of fantasies. And look at it. It's a cult following, man. The thing's crazy. It's over 5 million people regularly watching this. I'm honored to be part of it.
I've had the incredible fortune to travel with you guys on the road for what seems to be months, but it's only been a couple weeks.
Yeah, with you wear on us a lot. It seems like yours to me, you know what I mean?
I don't make too many mistakes, but the ones I do make are pretty big. So,
oh, like leaving me in a truck stop? Yeah, that was a good one. At 4 in the morning, I think it was.
Yeah, that was pretty cool,
oh,
too.
Man.
Yeah, I felt pretty bad.
I'm glad
about
I had my phone with me. That's all I could say. Or you guys would have been all the way to L.A. before you figured it
out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to put footage of that up there. So, but one of the things that I noticed is that everything that you do, whether you're driving a bus or orchestrating the band and in your organizational skills and your leadership skills. And when we go places, like last night, the Rainbow, after you played at the Key Club, I mean, they closed the place down, but you and your few select friends were allowed to stay. Something about you is just you know, people love. You know, what do you think that is?
I just try to treat everybody the way that I want to be treated. And I look at people, you know, and I give them the equal respect that they deserve. And there's so many people out there that feel entitled to take. You know what I mean? And I hate that. Nobody's entitled like that. You should treat everybody the way you want to be treated, because when somebody treats you bad with disrespect, you're not happy. And the people you treat bad feel the same way. It's no different. Nobody's entitled to treat anybody bad that doesn't deserve it, you know? So treat people the way they deserve to be treated, you know, and people will appreciate that. That's all. Just being fair, man. Consequences are the most important thing to think about. Everybody, the action that you do, whether it be good or bad, always has consequences. If you do negative actions, there's negative consequences. The bigger the action, the bigger the consequence. And those consequences don't go away. The action takes 2 seconds. We're all capable of all types of violence, all types of good, all types of bad. Anybody, I mean, from the smallest person, it doesn't matter your size. It matters your will to do it. And there's a lot of people out there, and they say, I don't care, I don't give a fuck. Well, you know what? You're going to care when you get mailed. You're going to care when you pay those consequences. Because all this stuff out here, if you've never done time, been locked away in cells for a long time, you have no idea the consequences. And the people that have done it and say, oh, it ain't shit, well, I don't even fuck those guys. Their opinion doesn't matter anyway. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. What's it like being in a little cell, solitary?
You know, you get used to it, I'm sad to say, but you have to. If you don't get used to it, you're not going to survive. You're going to go nuts. People are adaptable. You can do just about anything, and over time, somebody's going to be adapting to whatever it is. You know, whether it be torture. In this day and age, there's not physical torture, but they've refined mental torture to a fine art. And if you've got the government pissed off at you, they have many ways to mentally break you down. And they'll try, you know. And if you're strong, you won't be broke down, but you're not going to have a good time while they're trying.
Absolutely. Attica 7, it's www.attica7.com. We got some great stuff coming up in the future, you think, here?
Yeah, I'm real excited about what's going on right now. I don't want to get into the details because it hasn't happened yet, and it's not good to talk about things that haven't happened yet with certainty, but we've got some good things coming up in 2013. I think you guys will be seeing us in many places.
Okay, so right now your fans can get CD on your website.
They can go to our website. They can go to iTunes, Amazon. I think FYE or FYI, one of those stores, and Best Buy.
Best Buy?
Yeah.
All right. And merchandise, shirts, things like that?
We got shirts, CDs, hats, posters, and the stuff's growing. You know, it's kind of in the infancy right now.
Music videos on the coming up?
Yeah, we do have one music video for Serial Killer that's done right now. I don't know if we're going to re-edit it. It's a good video, but I want to have a great video. So we'll see what happens there. We have plans for a series of videos coming up here within the next 2 to 3 months.
Fantastic. All right. Well, the fans are going to be in for a treat. I mean, like I said, I've been fortunate enough to travel with you guys, and you are my ultimate favorite. I've listened to a lot of bands, been with a lot of bands, but when people ask me what was your favorite tour, I'm going to have to say Attica 7.
I don't know, man. You want me to pay you now? Well, I left my wallet.
Check would be fine.
My wallet's at home, sorry, man.
Actually, I was thinking about a new bike. I mean, that one behind you looks pretty
what?
Good. So a new bike.
What?
Bike.
I can't hear you. What?
Motorcycle.
Huh? I can't hear you. I've been playing so much, I can't hear you.
That thing behind you lit up really beautiful. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Like, that's it messed up too, man. I gotta start getting reps.
Yeah. All right.
I'm Rusty Kunz with the band Attica 7, and you've been watching Rock Biz Magazine.
This is a little thing I got from it's a little thing I got from Kurt Sutter the other day.
Okay.
Yeah, listen.
That's all that matters. Can he
direction? Can he be a good father? Can he be a good husband? Can he, you know, do ultimately what his father couldn't do? Can he get him out of the guns? Can he get him into legit businesses? And him really trying to achieve it all. And is that possible? And if so, you know, how does one get there without just, you know, having a huge body count?
So how epic is the next season
going to
be?
Pretty good.
You know, it's pretty epic. You know, generally.
This is Charlie getting interviewed.
Okay.
Yeah, I got sent a lot of good shit.
You know, we this is going to be the, I believe, the penultimate season. So we're, like, well into the third act. And that's when, you know, when things get crazy generally in storytelling. So I think it's going to be a big season. It's going to have some people die, you know, it's going to have some shit happen.
Well, you should. No, go ahead.
You think it's going
to be redemption? Lifestyle and stay in one group, you know,
Charlie's take on his ride down from up north.
Okay, now see.
Didn't intend that to be a laugh line. Now, okay, you take there are weekend bikers here, especially in Los Angeles, but in every city, guys that like to get out on the road and ride
weekend
around.
Warriors.
Yeah, weekend warriors. And I know sometimes they give you flack because on the show you like to wear.
I wear the white sneakers. A Southern California thing to do. And I, when I was doing the research for the show, I went up to Oakland, which is the area that Sons of Anarchy takes place in, and got to hang out with a very well-known motorcycle club. And a lot of those guys wore white sneakers. And there was one guy in particular who was like the heir apparent of the of the club up there. He was basically the character that I play in Sons of Anarchy in real life. He'd had every single one of his birthday parties at the clubhouse, and his father was in the club and everything. And I just, you know, he had such an aura about him, this guy. And so I just basically borrowed the
You said he's wearing white sneakers, I'm going to wear white sneakers, but then you started to have people criticize you
who
wear like the leather and the black boots.
Yeah, and
saying,
they come up to
not...
me and say, hey, bro, why are you wearing white sneakers, man? Motorcycle, you know, bikers wear biker boots. And I say, you wear biker boots because you're a dentist.
During the week. You're riding on the weekend, and suddenly,
You know, you ride a bike every day. You ride in tennis shoes. I mean, sometimes if I'm just going down to the post office or something, I'll ride my bike in flip-flops, you know, whatever's clever.
Why not? Yeah. Paint your toenails and just go for it.
Sure. You know.
Get a pedicure, jump on the bike.
Okay. That's it. I'm done.
That was pretty funny, though.
Yeah. No, it's true. I've been there and seen people tell them, hey, man, what are you wearing sneakers for? He basically tells them to fuck off.
Yeah.
And I heard him tell people, what do you do? And he brought up the dentist. That guy was giving him a lot of shit. And he said, well, how many miles you put on your... The guy said 5,000. And he said, come back and talk to me when you put 20,000 to 25,000 on like I do.
Yeah.
I put 20 to 25 a year on mine.
Yeah, hey, if I had one, I would too.
Yeah.
You know?
What kind of pain meds?
Say that again?
What kind of pain meds did they give you?
Oh, Jesus Christ. I don't want to talk about all that over the air. Oh, my God. They gave, put it to you like this. They take care of me just fine. Same ones I was on in the hospital.
Yeah.
Shoot. All
right.
Yeah, I can't even deal with the pain because I'm still like in a lot of discomfort. And as it, you know, as shit settles down and goes and heals up and everything, it'll slowly subside. Yeah, he doesn't even want me, dude. I'm so upset. I can't even go to the gym for 2 weeks. Like, no gym, no nothing, no this, no that. I'm like, yeah, I'm like, I feel like I'm under house arrest. But, you know, I want to get better because this is not a fun feeling at all. Not nice. Ain't nothing nice about it.
Yeah.
Where is everybody?
I'm not sure. I mean, we got over 22,000. Over. I seen that. There's a lot from Australia today, probably because I put a thing out saying I was going to play these guys.
Huh.
Yeah.
So you got any more snippets from them, or?
Yeah, I do, but not today.
Oh, okay. Cool.
There, next week.
Thanks. Nice.
Because I got more coming.
Cool.
Yeah. So, all right. I hope you feel better.
Oh, thanks. I didn't get home till like 9:05 tonight.
Really?
And they almost didn't let me leave the hospital. Oh, I would have had a mental breakdown. I would have been like, it's all done. Because, see, I am so sleep deprived right now, it's not even funny. And, you know, when you're in the hospital, every shift the nurse comes and takes your blood pressure, listens to your heart, asks your name and your birth date for the 88,000,000th time. You know, and it's the same repetitive shit day in and day out. And it seems like just as I would be falling asleep, somebody's coming, wake me up. or my roommate's phone would ring, or company would show up, or, you know, just whatever. But
yeah.
You don't get no, I swear people don't, I swear people get sicker as they stay in the hospital, because you ain't getting no rest. It ain't happening. So
well,
I'm hoping now to, like, sleep maybe 10 hours.
Yeah. All right, but I'll give you another one, and then when it ends, I'm gone. But this one's Katie Sedell. She was autographed from some parole cards.
Okay.
If I was cheap. Oh, they're going to do this bullshit now. I guess we can't talk about parole cards.
Can't talk about anything nowadays. Shit.
Huh.
You gotta be careful when you're saying you're going to the store to buy toilet paper. You know? You might toilet paper a tree or a house or something. Shit. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Okay. All right, I got it now.
First of all, congratulations, Sons of Anarchy. People absolutely love this show. You've done such a good for you. It's just such a great show. And you know what's so funny is that it's a show that people probably had one idea about you, and you had sort of one certain fan base. Now you do Sons of Anarchy, and it has changed everything.
It definitely has. It has widened my base.
Yeah. Well, you now are a pinup girl for Motorcycle Club.
I am. I'm on the cover. Yes.
Well, yeah. Well, let's look at this. You're on the cover. I've dreamed of this, of being on the cover of Quick Throttle.
I like the title.
Incredibly sexy, and but also Quick Throttle. It's just fantastic.
It is pretty fantastic, yes.
And you know you're on the bike backwards, right?
I am on the bike backwards.
Okay.
I learned a few things.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, like, biker guys and biker men and women must be coming up to you all the time now.
Oh, well, or people that are fond of that culture or are interested in that culture.
I see.
I mean, we did a bike rally. Now I go to a lot of bike rallies and meet my new fan base, and we've had some interesting interactions. One time I went to the biker rally with Charlie Hunnam, who plays my son.
Your son. Mm-hmm.
And a guy came up and he had me sign my name on one leg, and Charlie signed his name on the other guy's leg. And then we took a little break, came back half hour later, and the guy had tattooed my name down his leg and Charlie's name. Now, I don't know if that's indicative of a biker culture, but it was an interesting fan.
I'm curious about the half hour. Like,
I know what happened then.
Who goes and gets a tattoo like fast?
I do. I don't know. Half an hour?
Is a place that sells churros and tattoos.
And it looks like a prison tat, you know. I don't know if you've ever seen one of those.
Yeah.
Yes. It was a rough tat.
I've only seen a prison tat. was that the oddest autograph request that you've had?
Well, I've had a few. No, I think the oddest one was I was at the DMV with my 18-year-old daughter. She was 16 at the time, getting her driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy comes up to me and he says, would you sign my parole card? I said, really? He said, yeah, I just got out. We watch you all the time. I said, well, what did you do? You know, like, just...
Did you ask? Yeah, of course I did.
I said, what'd you do? He said, robbery. I was in for 5 years. I said, well, don't, you know, be careful now. Don't do anything else. He goes, no, I'm reformed.
Be careful sounds like don't get caught.
Well, no,
now be careful next time.
It does, actually.
Witnesses murdered. Wow. That's I would think intense. And also to know that in prison they're watching the show all the time.
Well, you know, they also watched Married with Children. Peg was a big.
I can imagine.
I mean, my fan mail was, I'd say, 75% from prison. So I'm used to that audience. I don't know what that says.
I'm only at 65%.
All right, we're done. See you Thursday.
Oh. All right. Good night. We did.
All right, bye.